working on a project, the history of the gardens, or what is it?
I'm a master's student in the geography department, and my advisor is an environmental historian, and so I'm writing an environmental history of the gardens for my thesis. So I've been interviewed about 30, over 30 past gardeners, and I'm just trying to piece together what the gardens, how the gardens have changed over time, what they've been as a place to people, how people have experienced them, and also the gardens' relationship with the university. So is it okay if I record this interview? And
sure.
Okay.
Are they still in existence?
They are still in existence, yep.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I've gardened there for two years now. They're still on the same hillside, I think they were on when you were there.
I'm going to go back and look at them someday.
And they're beautiful. I really, they're a fascinating landscape and a place that I care a lot about, so I'm really enjoying writing this and talking to people about it.
Yeah, it was very nice how they sort of brought up against between Second Point and Picnic Point there. It's still, sort of undeveloped country. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, I've started my interviews asking people what do you remember about the gardens, and what were they like when you gardened there? What sticks out in your memory about them?
Well, we lived in Eagle Heights for a number of years in the 70s, and I'd gone away. I'd been a graduate student at the university, living in another, living in town, and then Carol and I got married, and we moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, Somerville, Massachusetts, for school and professional reasons for a while. And then, we found that we came back to Harvard, Tufts, because it was nearly as friendly as that. Gardens reignited that. We live in the Washington, D.C. area, in Montgomery County, Maryland, which has about a million people in it. But we live out in what's called the Ag Reserve in the northwest corner of Montgomery County, where we have space and it's undeveloped. And we've gardened every year we've been here. And then after we left Eagle Heights, I took a job at the University of Texas, and we garden there as much as the heat would allow. and then when I came back, we moved back to the Washington area. And lived down county, you know, in Bethesda, that area near where I grew up. We would garden, and then we moved down to where we are now. And out here about 22 years in Dickerson. Which is very rural. We garden now. We've been in the middle of a horrible hot drought.
I heard that. I had a friend visit me from Baltimore, and she said it hadn't rained in...
Baltimore's, I think, even worse.
Yeah.
Boston to Washington has been...
That's hard.
We have, you know, we set up a water system that somebody, a student, a neighborhood girl, bought our stuff while we were away recently.
Oh.
So it's doing fine.
Oh, good. Good.
Lights gardens.
Yeah.
Sort of like there are so many nationalities out there, and I expect it's still the case that people would grow all kinds of exotic vegetables, and you know, then you would get some of these from other people's seeds, and you'd try it out on your own, and so it was another venue where people would socialize through what they grew and they ate, and some, I remember there were some Koreans who had a garden near us, and they would, they had a tub, you know, a plastic tub where they were sort of fermenting vegetables that they harvested from their gardens, which was part of a Korean gardening tradition. It might have been kimchi, I don't know what it was, but it had a very strong characteristic odor. That was not uncommon. That was typical. And it also was sort of, I think, a release for a lot of people from other countries to maintain their cuisine that they couldn't otherwise get. We also, while we were there, helped organize the Eagle Heights Co-op, which sold stuff. And to cater to a lot of different nationalities and their tastes, and the proximity of Chicago, and a truck that ran down there from, on behalf of the other co-ops, Mifflin Street, Common Market, Williams, Willie Co-op, they were all, and Eagle Heights Co-op, you know, all picked up stuff. You know, we went to the markets in Chicago, which are incredible, and got stuff, but that was unrelated to the Eagle Heights Garden, but it was the same mentality to some extent.
What do you mean by the same mentality?
You would, you were on a pretty modest budget, so actually growing and freezing, you know, I remember we bought a freezer, a small chest freezer that we kept in our apartment. In the 600s, and when we got a two-bedroom apartment, vegetables from our garden would go there. Maybe we just use the freezer. Anyway, we had ways of, we canned a lot. We canned an awful lot. And that was the main way we preferred. But the university and university housing, which university housing is a big enterprise in its own self, with faculty housing and student housing at Eagle Heights, you know, they let people sort of run it. And they, I remember the first time we started something there, I remember it was a well-established institution when we were involved. But I remember the first garden we had, the one next to us, had a stake in it with a, one of those plastic Halloween trick-or-treat things, like jack-o'-lantern, plastic handle.
Yep.
It was about the size of a small pumpkin. Somebody had propped it up on this thing and written on it, Amy's Mud Patch.
Amy's Mud Patch.
So I think that was what it was. And I stayed there all summer. And it was the people who were gardening next to us. And then we got one at sort of the end because we joined kind of late and that year. And they found the space for us. And we sort of dug up a little bit more. And then I remember somebody else moved to Eagle Heights a little bit later than that. And they wanted to know if they could use that patch. We sort of dug up and we let them use that. So there was a lot of sharing that was going on. And people looked forward to the spring. People, I know people would grow scents in their apartments, like tomatoes. And some of them would get pretty far along. And I remember on one occasion, some people would, one guy would bring out his tomatoes he'd been growing in his apartment, and they already had green fruit on them.
Whoa.
So it was...
Wow.
And it was the usual thing about, well, my tomatoes are better than your tomatoes. And people would give away food or share food. And so it just created, I think, a very nice sense of community. Around the folks that live there and the people who were on the committees assigned space and water and whatever else, you know, gave generously of their time to make sure it worked. And I suspect that's still the case.
Yes, yeah. The people who are part of the committee definitely give many volunteer hours.
And they learned from whoever was there before, so there's a continuity. Evidently, otherwise it wouldn't be there.
It wouldn't, yeah. That's very true. I think, this is shifting gears, moving a little bit away from the gardens, but I think I found your name also as part of the campus planning, in a campus planning commission meeting minutes.
What was that about?
Were you, I think it was about the University Bay development, and you were...
And you had
just mentioned, because they were working on a plan, I think in 1970 or 71 for the campus, and you were quoted as being against their plan for turning that area into where the gardens are into recreation.
Where Lot 60 was, or it is.
Yeah.
They wanted to fill in a lot of that.
Oh.
And it wasn't that I was against it as much as, well, I was against the plan they had in mind. And there was this University Bay Marsh, and as you know, Lake Mendota suffers from eutrophication.
Yeah, yes, awfully.
And there was a marsh that was there, and there may still be parts of it.
Yeah.
But if there are remnants of it, it's because of what a group of us did, and including others in other kind of organizations on, around campus, was that it was our view that marshes basically serve as filters.
Yeah.
For nutrients, nitrates, and what have you, and that most of the marshes around Lake Mendota had been filled in, you know, in both in the city and then throughout surrounding Dane County, which was leading to even more eutrophication. And the lake probably had that historically before people even settled there.
Yeah.
But, it made it even worse. development plan that they have it just filling this in and putting buildings there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're going to put this huge medical complex out there. You may want to look out the windows and actually see something of nature. Something.
Yeah.
And also it serves an important purpose, even if it's more residual than actual, of actually filtering nutrients before they get into the lake, because
mm-hmm.
otherwise it's just going to get worse.
Yeah.
And because there's that little creek that goes through by the Biotron and,
yep.
and all of that area, then, so they would, it's not just open space, but it was a matter of there were strong ecological reasons. So that was
mm-hmm.
my point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they expressed that in the minutes or not, but that was.
Mm-hmm. I think that was expressed in the minutes, and you also commented on their plan to maybe put playing fields where the gardens were or something, which is what made me in the plan they were also laying out different kinds of open space and where open space would remain, and they had put a recreational area right over where the gardens.
Yeah.
Sad.
Well, a lot of people were against that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure.
And because, you know, everything that I talked about before, and probably all the other people you've spoken with,
mm-hmm.
who told you how much they valued the,
mm-hmm.
the gardens.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, you go out there evening with a hoe and, you know, chop down a few weeds and, you know, look at somebody who was trying to grow peanuts in a, a northern climb where in the south they have a much longer climb.
Yeah.
You say, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
you know, it would be interesting if, or if somebody else who was growing mung. Actually, I planted mung beans one year.
Oh.
Just on a lark, and you know, I got a small harvest of mung beans, and it was much cheaper to buy locally.
Yeah.
So it was a bad idea that they wanted to. You know, it's like the people, the planners really weren't aware of how people, on the one hand with the marsh, the value of leaving it that way, and they
mm-hmm.
left elements of it that way,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And then the gardens were serving a much, it wasn't just a matter of space that they converted something else that had, it was meeting social and community needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they forgot about that.
Yeah.
And, but, so it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, all's well that ends well. Maybe I wasn't as polite as I am right now in expressing this at you.
No, it's fascinating. Did you see a connection between the ecological arguments you're making for the marsh and the gardens too? I think the ideas behind gardens being also an environmentally beneficial is something that's more focused on today, and I was wondering if that was something that you thought about too.
I suppose if I step back to 30,000 feet, the answer would be yes.
Uh-huh.
I think it would fall under the umbrella of appropriate land use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything against development as long as it's sort of smart growth,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you build around transportation hubs and to encourage that use, and but you need things where people feel like they have some sort of other role, like the communities, the community spirit around the gardens,
mm-hmm.
and also natural areas, this small residue of a natural area, which reminds people about it's more than just the lake, it's all the other land around the lake that contributes to the quality of of the lake,
and
what happens if you mess with it too much.
Mm-hmm.
And there were that whole little corner of the west end of the university had a number of artifacts, some of them still in existence, that needed that I think could teach us about how people look things differently, maybe a couple, a generation before, the gardens.
Mm-hmm.
people did gardening a lot more.
Yeah.
And they did. You know, when we were involved in the Heights Garden, but it kept that alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And two, the marshes were part of the this ring of wetlands around the lake, mm-hmm. which helped with the lake. And also another sort of artifact. If you go down mm-hmm. along the path, you know, there's a where the 600s are. There's a little path that goes down to a parking lot
yep.
down by.
Yep, I know exactly where you're talking about. Uh-huh.
And then there's a path that goes along the edge of the lake there,
mm-hmm.
to sort of an easterly direction.
Mm-hmm.
They're old cement remains of where people who used. Before Eagle Heights existed, where people lived and camped,
mm-hmm.
where when they were students at the university,
yeah,
you probably know more about that than I do. Right along the bluffs, those bluffs overlooking the lake, and then if you go the other direction, just before you get into Shorewood,
mm-hmm.
there used to be an old farmer's fence line there.
Oh,
and it was gone. It disappeared. Oh. Sometime in the 70s, actually after we left. And one of the fence posts, there were these concrete thin fence posts that extended from Eagle Heights Road that went into, you know, to Shorewood there, in the woods. And they got torn out for some reason when they had to do some drainage project or something. But one of the fence posts had carved in the tops, it said 1915. Which was the year that fence was built.
Huh.
And when a professor, a very distinguished professor in the zoology department, Hans Ries, who was told me when he first moved to Madison from Rockefeller back in the 60s, early 60s, or late, I don't know when,
mm-hmm.
there were cows where Eagle Heights.
Mm.
And so that was part of that fenced-in area.
Huh.
And he was from Switzerland, and they wore cowbells. And it made him, reminded him of his youth in Switzerland with the cows in the hills in Switzerland. So, you know, it was, it made him feel very comfortable. And when he was at university houses, he's since moved to Shorewood, but and he's gone now. I remember you telling me that. So there were these sort of, there was another, you scrape away the surface and there was another time there.
Yeah.
And artifacts from those other things, but it doesn't mean you just preserve them for the sake of preserving them, but the certain elements of it, the space, the land use, the Eagle Heights Gardens, the land use, the marsh, actually played a very important role contemporarily.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with everything you said, and I love taking that walk from where the 600s are, Raymer's Cove, out to Picnic Point all along the shore, and then back in.
Yeah, around Second Point.
Around Second Point. Mm-hmm, exactly.
I found an old garbage dump back in the woods with old dairy bottles. Heidel, whatever. I got a couple of them, some still.
Oh, neat.
And stuff that was probably some farmer dumped his trash there. Back in sort of a little low area.
Mm-hmm.
In northwest, you know, sort of route of Picnic Point.
Yep. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and then I also pick apples. The old abandoned apple orchard that's directly east of the gardens? There's an old abandoned apple orchard.
Oh, yeah.
Directly east of the gardens, so.
Yes. There were a few trees there still.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't attended, so the apples were very wormy, but southern Wisconsin, particularly west of Madison, was very well known 19th century for its apples.
Mm.
And some communities well to the west of Madison still had apple festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was Mm-hmm. And that was probably part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember there were a few old apple trees there,
mm-hmm.
in the fields. And you served Byron on the worms, and they were very tasty.
Yep. Exactly what I still do now. There's still a few there also.
Yeah.
Still a few there.
And there's sort of, what's the term that one would use for tomatoes, which we plant a few every year. Not heritage, but...
Heirloom
apples, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, is there anything else that...
No, I don't think so. I think that you gave me a very rich description of what the things that you remember.
Was a lot of participation.
There was. Okay.
Yeah, and there was always demand for gardens, and the university was involved, or university houses probably, you know, the residence halls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there were a couple other guys on the main campus. But it was pretty much, they weren't that involved with it. It was pretty much run by the residents,
mm-hmm.
on a sort of cooperative basis.
Mm-hmm.
Committees and, all different kinds of people. And,
mm-hmm.
and different kinds of stuff grew there because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I made some foreign students feel better about being there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they could grow part of their culture that they had left temporarily.
Yeah. Was it difficult to communicate with the foreign students? Now there are a lot of grandparents.
No, that wasn't a big deal. Actually, maybe more difficult now.
Mm.
But then it was, I think English was, it was English as a second language, but it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, it didn't take a lot of communication about, like, what's that?
Or,
try this. Or,
Yeah.
But I do remember at times in the summer somehow foul that kimchi smelled or whatever that was. It was interesting that they tried.
Yeah. And there's definitely that variety still in the gardens. I haven't noticed any buckets of decomposing, fermenting things.
Fermenting. Yeah, I knew it was something that was definitely to be eaten, canned, and eaten later.
Mm.
You probably did it out in the garden because it would stink up the house.
Yeah.
Or the apartment.
Yep.
That
yep.
might have attracted the attention of the residence hall management.
That's true.
But then that was not that common. Certainly growing vegetables that weren't around elsewhere.
Yeah.
The other place where you saw a tremendous internationalism was in the preschool at Shorewood Elementary, or son Peter, who now has two children of his own, started there. There was some almost like 30 nationalities in Shorewood.
Wow.
Preschool and kindergarten.
Wow.
That didn't even represent everybody.
Yeah.
And they would walk home from there through university houses in the Hill Heights or in the university houses as well. So.
Mm. Mm.
So there it is.
That's fascinating.
I hope this has been helpful. Carol probably had even more recollections.
Mm-hmm.
She.
I'll try to give her a call. This has been extremely helpful, Mike. I really appreciate you taking a little bit of time to talk with me. Do you have any?
Sorry. Memory may be fuzzy.
Oh no, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Do you have any other questions for me? I'm planning on sharing what I write with everybody that I've talked to.
No,
okay.
Overall, it was a great experience,
mm-hmm.
and we garden to this day.
Oh, good.
But it's been
suffering.
I think the farmers out where we live have lost their second crop of soybeans.
Oh, that's hard. That's so really hard.
How's Wisconsin's agriculture in southern Wisconsin this year?
I think things are going pretty well, actually. We had a really wet spell, and then it dried out quick, fast enough so that...
March and April were wet, but then May and June have been record dry.
The vagaries of gardening and farming. It's hard.
Benjamin Franklin said, and this probably applied to folks in Eagle Eye Gardens, you never knew a farmer that was happy with the weather for more than 2 days at a time.
It's true. I'm not.
Well, thank you for your interest, Emma.
Thank you for talking with me.
Sure. I had a great experience in Madison. It was an outstanding place to study biology. Yeah. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
From the molecular to the behavioral level, everything had a sort of a context of how does it fit in the environment.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really fascinating. That's good.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be in touch. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.